just become fun for me. I love being able to get my dog out and have him kind of be the superhero, I guess, and, mm-hmm. and come out and do what he's trained to do. And there's just no better feeling for me when it comes to work.
Everybody, and welcome back to Hustlin' in Heels podcast. I'm your host, Stacy, and I am enjoying my week off on vacation. So as you all know, those of you who are interacting with me on social media, it's been a great week. I've been enjoying the sun. I've been enjoying the water. We've been out on a fishing trip. Haven't been catching shit for fish, but we certainly have had a lot of fun. So we took a family trip out there and up to a little fishing lake and just hung out with the fam all week. So I am still on vacation, but I'm back in the studio. I have an awesome guest tonight that I can't wait to introduce you guys to. But I just wanted to say a quick thanks to those of you who reached out, gave me some love out on social media with the launching of the new format of the solo hosting format. I really, really appreciate that. And for those of you who are sharing with your friends, with your moms, with your sisters, with your dads, continue to do so. Leave us a review. Leave us a comment. Go out to iTunes, subscribe, or on Stitcher or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. So thanks for continuing to share. We appreciate that. All right. That was a lot of housekeeping stuff. Now, the important thing. I'm drinking some fantastic bubbly tonight. I'm kind of going back to our roots here. And in the first couple episodes, you remember that we drink only bubbly stuff. And then we kind of ventured out and we've even had some beer recently. But I went back to Lemon Creek Winery on my way here tonight and picked up a bottle of their fantastic Blanc de Blanc. And it's as good as it was a couple months ago. And I'm enjoying it tonight, my Hustlin' in Heels wine glass. How about you, Kelly?
Very good. Very good. Thank God for alcohol.
Kelly approves. So that voice that you hear, listeners, is our guest tonight. So I am joined in the studio tonight by Kelly Boyer. And Kelly is a canine patrol officer. So welcome, Kelly.
Thank you.
I met Kelly, was it a couple months ago, maybe? With the financial institution that I work for, we do a program where we help raise funds for the purchase of a couple of canines for some of the departments in our area. And so I met Kelly at a training session where Kelly was participating in, and I've learned all about the canine program in the last 9 months. And it's so fascinating that I thought it'd be great to bring Kelly in here so you guys could learn about it kind of from an insider's perspective, because from an outsider's perspective, it's just I go into these buildings and there's just these badasses who have these amazing dogs who are trained to go and take down the bad guys and protect the rest of us out there. So it's just something that's super cool to watch. And so I thought it'd be awesome if you guys could learn a little bit about it too. So yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah. I love it.
Professional badass.
Yeah. Not that. No, the dog is. I'm not. Luckily he does what I say. So that's what I wanted to do since I was probably 4 years old. And I pursued it and finally got it. And now I love my job.
So you said 4 years old? Really?
Yeah. I think there's pictures of me in a Halloween costume when I was 4 years old, all dressed up as a cop and pretending to be Rin Tin Tin and all sorts of stuff when I was young. So to my credit, though, my dad was a cop. So that helped me and kind of made me get into what I got into. And I just knew I wanted to go the dog route and combine both of my passions.
Okay. So let's talk about that. So your dad was a cop growing up. What was that like?
At first, I didn't think anything of it. As I got older and started to branch out and try different things, he's obviously seen what he sees, made him a lot more cautious on what I was allowed to do and stuff like that. It made it a little harder to get away with things. But overall, I think it definitely prepared me for the real world. And he's definitely my hero. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So was he excited when you decided you wanted to be a cop as well?
Not at all.
Right.
Yeah. No. No. He told me not to do it. For many years, he tried to get me to go into many different things just because of what becoming a cop makes you do. And it kind of changes your personality. It makes you a little bit of a harder person, less trusting, and a little bit cynical towards the world. And I don't think he wanted to see that in his daughter. So a lot of the things you see obviously change who you are as a person. So that made it him want me to go into something different. But once he saw that it was my passion, he was very, very, very supportive and helped me get to where I'm at today. So
yeah. So do you think that growing up, you said you were four when you first really, really remember wanting to be that. Do you think growing up, a large portion of it was emulating, wanting to emulate him as well, or just something that you innately felt like that was your passion?
Probably both. I saw him go to work every day and then heard his stories, but I also had, I guess, curiosity. I'm very, very nosy, and when I love adrenaline and challenges, and I can't sit still, so I knew, seeing what he did, I just always wanted to hear about it and know about it and do it. So I never really thought about doing anything else. I just knew that's where I was going to go. And then with him as my role model, it made it easy.
Yeah. So when did you start down that path?
I probably knew, like, in middle school, I just knew I had to work hard, and it kind of kept me out of trouble a lot because I didn't want to ruin my career before it started. So a lot of the decisions I made were based on, well, you want to be a cop someday. So even when I was looking for jobs when I was in high school and stuff, they would be like security officer and stuff like that because I knew I wanted to build a resume from a very young age. And so, yeah, I minored in Spanish to help like set me apart when I applied and stuff like that. So,
wow. All right. So you graduate from high school. What is the process to becoming an officer?
For me, luckily, I had my dad to tell me you still wanted to get your 4-year degree. So I went to Grand Valley State University.
Go Lakers.
Yes.
That's where I went.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. When did you graduate from there?
Oh, I hardly want to say. But 06.
Oh, I was 02.
Okay. Yeah. I feel better now.
There you go. No, I'm officially still the oldest one in here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, I graduated in 06 and luckily got hired that fall after I graduated the police academy. So I've been where I'm at for the last 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Halfway there almost.
So there's a program at Grand Valley specifically for that?
Yeah, you can actually, the police academy there counts towards your credits for your degree. So it worked out well for me.
Okay. So. And then you minored in Spanish?
Minored in Spanish. I actually studied abroad in Spain for a semester. So that helped me in the Spanish department. Mm-hmm. 12 years later, I'm not as good as I was. But when I got hired, I could speak Spanish pretty well. So.
Do you utilize it a lot?
Definitely. When they need somebody that speaks Spanish, I can bring it back, kind of like riding a bike. But I got a little bonus when I got hired to be able to speak Spanish. So when it's necessary, I can get through it. And it's nice to just have that to fall back on.
Sure.
So
you graduate and then you get a job right away. Was there an internship or anything like that before then?
That's part of the program at Grand Valley. Okay. I had to do an internship with Granville Police Department.
Yeah, okay. So, a lot of action in Granville?
No, not at all. No, it was nothing compared to what I ended up going into.
No, so. I can only imagine. I mean, being at Grand Valley and then knowing Granville. Pretty squeaky clean in comparison, I'm sure. So that was part of it, kind of like as a teacher going in. I did my student teaching at Granville High School. So, yeah, a little bit different than what I eventually, the classrooms that I went into. So, So you do that. Was that a good experience? I mean, did that just confirm that that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah, it was very, everybody there was super kind. They knew that it was my passion. They helped me get where I wanted to go. It helped kind of steer me in what kind of department I wanted to work for. I knew I wanted to work for a department with a canine team because that was my ultimate goal. So
why did you, was your dad a canine cop?
No.
Okay, so why did you have that additional passion?
Dogs have always been my passion. Love dogs. Always have. Always played with dogs when I was little, and I wanted to be able to combine the two.
Huh. So, yeah. Okay. Did you have any mentors like throughout college or maybe before you joined the force that were canine officers that you could reach out to?
Nothing canine wise. It was all, that was kind of my own thing. Uh-huh. The cop thing, obviously my father, but yeah, everything canine was just because I knew I loved dogs.
Oh.
So.
So you graduate, you join the force. Tell me what that first week is like. You're out on your own.
Terrible. luckily for me, I had a connection. I could call my dad whenever I had a problem, but they put you into obviously a whole bunch of different training things, and then you go into a field training officer situation. So it's literally somebody riding in the car looking over your shoulder telling you everything you do wrong for 3-4 months, depending.
No, it's that long.
Yeah. It's they do 3 different phases, and there's different levels of what they allow you to do and not allow you to do, and let you screw up and learn from it and stuff like that. But I think you need every minute of it, depending on who you are, where you've grown up. But me growing up from in a smaller town to then put me into a, I don't want to call it a big city, but a different culture almost. You have to learn how to talk to people and how to deal with different situations that don't make sense to you necessarily. And if you approach them wrong, you can really offend people, or you can completely throw off the whole call before it gets started. So.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because that's not something I've really thought about before. But if you're coming from a small town and you don't have a lot of this other real life experience where you're actually out on the road dealing with other people like that, and I'm assuming that's not something that you learn in college either. So what is that process like? Like learning that you have to talk a different way. What does that mean?
It's just, it's almost a tactic that you learn for either your safety or just to get information. For me, it helped that I studied abroad in Spain, because I got thrown into a whole different culture. So I learned that you have to adapt and adjust and understand that everybody comes from different backgrounds and has different experiences. You really have to hold your judgment at the door, because you never know where somebody's been or what they've been through. And as long as you, it sounds cliche, but if you treat people like you want to be treated, regardless of what you're there for, it'll save you every time.
So. Did you have some situations right out the gate where you reacted one way and then maybe you realize you should have reacted a different way?
Go ahead. You find out really quick there's different levels when you deal with people. You can either go 0 to 100 right away, but if you have nowhere to go from 100, if you don't have a reason to arrest them, or you don't have some sort of violation to make them move or do what you want them to do, you've just basically played all your cards.
Yeah.
So the trick, I think, one of the things that helps me is if you just stay calm and talk to them like you would want to be spoken to, and understand that they might be dealing with something that you've never dealt with, and treat them fairly, you're going to be a lot better off than coming right out and yelling and screaming and threatening to take them to jail and stuff, because sometimes you can, sometimes you can, but it's not always the best. You're going to get tempers right back, and then the insults start flowing, and if you take things personal, there's just a lot of growing pains where people, as soon as I yelled and they're yelling, and then I realized, like, I have nowhere to go from here, and now we're both yelling at each other, and this is just a...
All options are exhausted.
Yeah, we're at a standoff, and there's really nothing I can do.
Sure. So how long did it take you to learn that you've got to be the calmest one?
You learn it right away. Applying it is something different, I would say. Probably 3 to 5 years you get in a more of a comfort zone and dealing with people in different situations. Mostly because now you've at least seen or experienced almost a form of everything or something that you're going to deal with. Obviously, every day there could be something new, but you've kind of seen it or at least been exposed to something. So it's not as like, oh my gosh, you know, the shock value of showing up and seeing the reactions that you see isn't quite as bad as it was the first time.
Yeah. So you go through that 3 to 4 month training process. And then do you remember your first day out on your own?
I remember very vaguely. I couldn't tell you like specific details. Sure. I just remember being like very nervous. I know the first time I arrested somebody, I called my dad to tell him, like, I arrested my first person by myself. I was super excited, or, you know, stupid things like that. But, yeah, I don't remember like specifically driving around. I can tell you I had to do a lot of backing up and turning around, because I didn't know my way around the city at all. And it'd take me triple as long to get anywhere. So.
Well, and that was back before, like, you know, maps on our smartphones all the time, right? So, I mean, that's another thing that you don't think about.
Yeah, like, I remember pulling out map books and being like, I don't even know where this road is. And having to, like, pull off the side of the road and look and figure out the intersections. And it was, yeah. So it makes me sound old, but you had to back before cell phones and stuff and computers. So.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, because I'm an awful driver and I'm really bad with directions too. So, I mean, I remember having an atlas in my car where I would have to like pull that thing out, man, and try. Mm-hmm. And then I still couldn't figure out, you know, most of the time. And this was even before like MapQuest, where you could go on the computer and then print off the directions. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I remember calling my dad all the time, being like, all right, dad, because he's in sales, so he travels all the time. And I'd be like, all right, here are the roads I'm at. Tell me how to get home. So thank goodness for dads.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I can't thank mine enough. But for some reason, I always had people will laugh, but I always thought south was north and north was south in the city where I work. And so I was constantly driving the wrong direction. It's terrible.
So now are your cars equipped with like a navigation system? Is that how you just plug in the address and you go?
Yeah, I pretty much could get anywhere in the city pretty safely now. Mm-hmm. I've been there 12 years, so I know it pretty well.
Yeah.
But you still can pull up. The call comes with its own little location, and you can pull up a map, and it shows you almost exactly every road, every intersection. It shows you how to get there. It's a lot of them. If you have the GPS hooked up right, it'll show your car getting closer to it. So nice, which is nice. Like as a canine officer, obviously we travel throughout the county, and there's a lot of county roads. I have no clue where they are, so you have to pull up the map and figure out where you're going before you start speeding that way. So, or try to.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're to the point where you're on your own now. Those first couple of years, you're learning how to do this job. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
It was stressful, but I love a challenge. So for me, it was fun. Every day you'd figure out like little tricks of the trade, little ins and outs, different ways of handling things that made it a lot easier, things that you were doing that made your job a lot harder. So it's stressful because everything's new and you're trying to remember the law and everything to get it down in a report and get it all just perfect. And you don't even remember, you know, to ask certain questions. So you're constantly calling people back. You forget to ask for stupid things. And so there's a lot of self-checking, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So it's stressful in that sense, but it's fun to learn it all. And you find kind of your core group of people, either you got hired on with or that you trust, and then you're all calling each other constantly saying, like, do you know how, or how do I do this, or have you ever been here?
And because there's so much more to it than just being out on patrol and pulling people over, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's so, like, the easy part.
That's the easy part. Okay, so explain that a little bit more.
Mostly it's just knowing like what you are allowed to do and not allowed to do, and not violating people's rights, and not and knowing where your boundaries are, and then knowing what to ask, when to ask it, how you can ask it, and I guess thinking of all that while you're going to the call, and then keeping all your safety and tactics in mind too, and then knowing where you're going. So you try to put all that in your head while you're driving there, and then still trying to drive, which for me is sometimes a challenge in itself. So there's just a lot going through your mind. And then you get there, and if the person's excited at all, you have all this stuff you're trying to ask them and calm them down and stay within your policies and procedures. Mm-hmm. And so your mind's just going 100 miles a minute.
Does that ever change?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Now I can take a call, you know, and dang near with my eyes closed.
Yeah?
Yeah. It comes at like any job.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. You do it for 12 years. Yeah. But, I mean, I wonder, so you get the call in, and every call is different, but obviously there are similarities, right? Mm-hmm. So you've been on this call before, just in a different way, probably, right? But what's it like going into these situations where, yeah, maybe you've had something similar, but everything could be different? So what's it like going into that, preparing yourself for that, going into these situations really where you're going into an unknown every time?
It depends on the level of, I guess, for me, like danger or potential violence on your way there that can spike my adrenaline or not. Very rarely do I get an actual just basic police call that I've never taken before. But if it's a more high stress, potential violence, fast acting situation, then you have to, I guess I had to learn, I don't know if everybody does, how to like cap your adrenaline and keep that under check so you don't get out of the car shaking and screaming into the radio.
How do you do that?
Experience, probably. Breathe different before you get on the radio. Take a deep breath so you're not screaming in the radio. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. So are there some calls that you remember from your early years?
Oh, yeah. There's plenty that I've messed up. Biggest one that I had to correct over the years was when I would first start to like chase people on foot and stuff, I would scream like a woman in trouble on the radio every time. And nobody understood where I was or anything because I literally would screech just, and so nobody could ever come and help me and I could never catch them. But I since I've learned to calm myself down, but Yeah, the high pitch because you're so excited.
I'm sure nobody on the force made fun of you for that.
Oh, all the time. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Right. I was known for that. So,
yeah, but that comes in handy when you have to be the decoy. I've learned for canine training.
Yeah, it does.
They really appreciate that.
I do have a screechy boy. Yeah, they thank goodness it came in handy for something because talking on the radio was not one of them. But it took me a few years to be able to control my adrenaline enough to speak clearly, even if things were hitting the fan. So,
wow. Okay. Yeah. So talk about one of your memorable calls.
Pre getting the dog. I don't even remember anything big. The foot pursuits are probably the biggest ones. I remember arresting my first guy. Probably. I don't even like getting into fights wasn't a big thing for me. It was just. Nothing crazy, just seeing stuff you've never seen before. I don't really have any, to me, cool stories because I've been doing it so long. So I'm like, oh, it's just.
That's just normal, right? Yeah.
And I feel bad. Like, sometimes my cool stories are somebody else's tragedy. So
yeah,
I'm like,
sure. Yeah, so it's hard to talk about that for sure. So let's transition then into how long were you an officer before you got a dog?
It's about 6 years.
Okay.
So, yeah, I had to put in for it 5 times before I got on the team. So I just knew that's what I wanted. So I just, as soon as I was eligible, I put in for it. And that process is like interview and agility course and things like that. And I probably wasn't ready the first couple times. And then the last couple times, I just decided I was going to be the best. Mm-hmm. And so they had no reason, or they had to really come up with a reason not to take me. So I got myself in shape and killed the agility test and the interview. After 5 times, you finally figure it out. So I finally got on the team. And from there, I don't know. It's just my passion. I don't have kids, so it makes it a little easier. I have a lot of time to spend on the dog team, and it's just become fun for me. I love being able to get my dog out and have him kind of be the superhero, I guess, and come out and do what he's trained to do. And there's just no better feeling for me when it comes to work. Is for him to come out and do exactly what I just spent countless hours working on. If he finds somebody at the end of a track, it's the most amazing feeling.
So. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So did you have to go to a training school?
We actually did in-house training because I luckily had a sergeant that had a ton of dog experience and a couple other guys on the team with a ton of dog experience. And they were able to do in-house training with me, which made it a lot easier because then I was in my comfort zone and it was kind of a one-on-one. If I had a question, I could ask him without having to ask in front of a group. And he knew dogs well enough to help me get through any struggles with my particular dog. So that was really lucky on my part, I think. So
what was the, not the same dog, right? Is this a
No, I've different... had the same dog the whole time.
Oh, the same dog. Okay. Yep. So let's talk about him.
Yeah. His name's Nero. He's 7 years old this year. He's a German Shepherd. He came straight from Germany. And all of the dogs where I work are all dual-purpose dogs, so he does the tracking and the narcotics and the buildings and patrol work or apprehension work and handler protection and all that kind of thing. So it takes a long time to get the dog to teach a dog that doesn't speak English, as silly as that sounds, to do what you tell him to do for a stupid rubber toy, you know, especially the dogs that we get because they don't come, like, lazy. They come with super high drive and a little bit of assholism, I guess I would call it. Sure. So they're ready for whatever. And so to get that little creature to go out and do what you tell him to do is just the awesomest feeling in the world for me.
Yeah. So his name's Nero, right?
Yep.
And he came from Germany, you said, and he speaks a different language. That was one of the first things in learning about the program that kind of blew me away, that dogs can understand a different language, right? So like
I don't even know if they speak a different language or care. They
right,
just...
not speak, right? Obviously. Yeah. I know. I'm on my second class, you guys.
They just communicate. I swear I could, now that Nero's 7, I could probably just move my body in a certain way or use a certain tone and say whatever I wanted, and he would know he should sit. It's just because I'm with him 12 hours a day. He's in my back seat. He hears me when I'm upset. He hears me when I sing. Uh-huh. You know, he doesn't care. Mm-hmm. So he'll actually, if I'm in a bad mood at work, he'll pace in the back seat until I calm myself down. He just reads me that. They're so, I guess, sensitive to a handler's mood. That was probably one of the harder lessons I had to learn is if I'm in a bad mood or if I'm not confident in him, he knows it immediately upon me getting him out of the car, it runs right down lead. So you wouldn't think it does, but they can pick up on that so fast. So you have to really watch how excited you are, how not excited you are, if you're confident, if you're not confident, because they pick up on it. Whether it's you smell different, your body language, whatever it is, they know.
And they feed off of it, right?
Completely. Yeah. If I got him out and was just a dud every time I got him out, he would just be like, okay, I don't care either then. Or if I'm super, if I get too mad at him because he's not tracking or not doing something I want him to do, he'll basically give me the middle finger and go start peeing on trees.
Huh.
Because he's like, fine, I don't care either. Right. So they're like a little kid. They'll throw a little fit too. So you have to be very careful to keep your mood somewhat hidden from them. If you are mad at them, you got to kind of rein it in until you can work through whatever issue that's making you mad, because they'll pick up on it and either shut down or fight back in a sense sometimes, you know? So,
yeah. So they're, and their confidence is built by you.
Yep. Yep. That's why we do countless hours of training. So the training tracks and the training that you came out and watched, the building searches that some people will say, well, we'll never have to do that, so why are we doing it here? It's because when you do the basic building search, they're so confident because they've been in a pitch black basement or had loud music blaring in their ears or bottles thrown at them or people screaming.
That was such an interesting day. Yeah,
people screaming at the top of their lungs at them as they come up the stairs. Going into a boring old house is just an everyday, like, oh, this is no big deal. I can go in, do my job. There's nothing. This is easy. So,
yeah. So talk about that training. I mean, I was blown away by the amount of training you guys do.
Yeah. I would say it was definitely a shock when I got on the canine team, and the physical training is obviously a huge part of it, but then you have the paperwork to back it all up. So I would say running a canine is one of the most time consuming jobs on the department because of how much you have to document everything. And a dog is just like a kid. If you don't remain consistent with them, the next time you get them out of the car, don't expect them to do what you told them to do, because they haven't been forced to do it. So they're going to test your limits every chance they get. And so you have to stay up on them, or they're just going to do what they want when you get them out of the car and pretty much embarrass you in front of a bunch of people that you're trying to help out. So, and I would hate if I got, I try to prepare my dog that if a call comes out that the Super Bowl, I always call it, where my partners need a dog and he needs to be first in and he needs to basically put himself in the line of fire before all of us. That's what I have him for. So I go and do these different trainings so he's ready for that. I would hate to send him or release him into a building or have something happen where he wasn't able to perform because of a lack of training on my part, and then somebody got hurt, an officer got hurt. That's, I think, the motivation behind a lot of us and why we train so hard, is we want our dogs ready for the Super Bowl when we need them for the Super Bowl.
So what are some of those training, what are some of those training modules that you do? If you can just tell our listeners a little bit about it again, because I've spent, you know, a few days now with the canine team in different training scenarios. And Kelly always makes fun of me because when I first showed up to training, I was wearing a dress and some heels. And listeners know I wear heels all the time.
Insane.
She was like, I think I might have, you want some flip flops or something?
I have some dirty dog drool, hairy everywhere. And she's in fancy dress, hair down, in high heeled shoes, walking around like her feet don't hurt. And I know for sure your feet hurt.
My feet didn't hurt, but I in my defense, I did have like a presentation that day I had to go to right from there. So I had to wear the heels that day. But so I show up and I'm like, oh, hey, guys. And these guys are like the real deal, and they're doing all this training. And so talk about some of the training that you guys do.
It comes in all forms. We don't get to do the badass training, as you call it, all the time, because when most people around here, when we get our dogs, they're completely what we call green dogs. So they don't know how to sit. They don't know how to stay. They don't care about you. They only care who feeds them, and they know how to bite people most of the time. So you have to, one, build that bond with your dog so he trusts you and you trust him. You kind of become his pack leader, so to speak. And then you have to teach them that when you tell him to do something, he has to do it without asking questions. So our training can be as basic as bringing him inside the building and making him sit and heel and stay, or it can go all the way up to taking him into a crowded stadium and making him heel next to you and go and apprehend somebody in the middle of a loud music, crazy bash. So you have to, at least in my opinion, have your dog prepared for the worst of the worst. So when something simple comes up, they're ready for it, and they're not going to question it. They're going to do what you say because they know you wouldn't put them into a bad situation. So they just think, here I go. I'm going to do it because I get that little rubber toy at the end. And mom's never steered me wrong, so here goes nothing.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of obedience training, too, involved in it.
Yeah, yeah. If your dog doesn't listen to what you say, then you basically have an out-of-control dog, and you're going to put people in more danger. You can't have a dog that's just going to haul off and do whatever he wants when he wants to do it. He has to come to you when you need him to come. He has to stay when you need him to stay. There's so many reasons why if they just went off and did their own thing. If I release my dog and he runs over and decides he's going to go chase a cat as opposed to go get the bad guy shooting at us, I've just defeated the purpose of having a dog, you know? So that sounds silly, but no, you have to train those scenarios so that when a cat runs one way and the person runs the other, the dog doesn't care about the cat. He goes after the person, so.
Yeah, and I don't think, I'm certain that the vast majority of the public realizes the amount of training that goes into making sure that these dogs are there to protect the public and to protect you guys. And even one of the trainings that I went to, too, where the dog had to go and apprehend somebody out of a car. But then not only was it that, but then you added that extra flash bomb thing to it, right? So to make sure that the dog, if there were some type of explosives there too, that the dog wouldn't get distracted by that and would continue with the job that they were supposed to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even thinking on that level, that not only could this happen, but not only could A, B, and C happen, but D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, you know, all those things could happen, and you have to prepare for all those things as well. And you're doing it with the primary purpose of protecting the public and protecting your fellow officers.
Right. Yep. And I think that's part of the reason why I think good training groups are so important, because if I don't think of a scenario, then my partner will think of a scenario, or will have been in one and be like, oh, my dog did this in this scenario. Let's train it to make sure either your dog does the same thing or your dog never does that.
Mm-hmm.
So it really helps to have a good training group so we can all bounce ideas off each other, different dog problems we have. So when our dog is asked to perform, they perform confidently and there's no question what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest thing, is that the dog has the confidence to go do what you tell them to go do. And as long as they feel like they're going to win in every situation, I feel confident that I could put my dog in the most situations and he's going to perform like I've trained him to perform. So it's a good feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And in this day and age, I'm assuming there is such heightened liability too surrounding
your career. Yeah, that's the not fun part about having a dog. Yeah.
Right. And especially if you're a canine officer. So talk a little bit about that, about the added liability that comes with having a dog.
Obviously, you have a four-legged furry missile with teeth. So you have to be careful because on the one hand, you want him to be I guess, kind of liaison between the community and the police officers, because everybody loves a good dog.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be able to get him out and have kids pet him and play with him. But you also want him to have a switch where when it's time for business, it's business. And I think a lot of the police dogs around here were beginning to realize like that switch is one of the more important things to look for when you're getting a new dog. So you can have the best of both worlds and you can go out and you can interact with the community and you can show them that this dog is part of us and they like us and they're willing to do whatever they do for you just as much as they are for the police. But if there's a dangerous subject, they're not afraid to put themselves in front of other officers and do what they have to do at that time, too. So the liability part, obviously, there's just a ton of case law and knowing what you can do with your dog and when you can and when you can't use them. The paperwork to back up all of your trainings is super important nowadays. So when you go to court and somebody questions what you did or why you did it or if you were allowed or a lot of the questions that come up is how do you know that your dog was right? Or how do you know that he was alerting to drugs? Or how do you know that he was on the right track and found the article or whatever? And so you have to have just years and pages of documentation to back up everything. So we go to a school. A lot of us around here go to school where we get certified once a year. And that we basically have to be certified in order for our dog to have that backing when we go into court to say, yes, my dog can track per this national standard. He can find drugs. He can find articles. He'll do patrol work per this national standard, which helps in the liability. If somebody questions, like, how do you know your dog is able to do this or mm-hmm. did it correctly? So that helps.
Man, a lot of damn work.
So much work. You have to love it. If you don't love dogs and you don't want to put work into it, then don't become a canine handler.
Yeah.
But because I love both, I love the training, and there is probably no better feeling than when your dog does what you've trained him to do, and he does it perfectly, and you're like, oh my gosh, He did learn. I don't have kids, but I'm sure it's something like when they graduate kindergarten or whatever. You're like, oh my gosh.
I have three. So I try to train them as best I can. But I mean, training that confidence. But yeah, sometimes they're little assholes, just like the dogs.
Yeah, you have to be consistent because if you give them dessert without making them eat their dinner one day, then the next thing you know, they just go straight for dessert every time. And
what's their dessert? They love those little things.
Those toys. Just toys. Yeah. They're the easiest paid officers on the department. You give them a little rubber toy and they're just as happy. Mine will, he goes crazy for his. All the dogs have a little different motivator. Uh-huh. So they have different toys or food or whatever you might use. But mine would jump off a cliff if I threw his toy off the cliff. He's just that crazy for it. So
you only bring it out when he deserves it or when he gets rewarded with it.
Right. And that was probably mm-hmm. one of the harder things I learned because I was a dog person growing up. So I thought, oh, cute. I'm going to have a little dog to play with. And he'll come home and he'll sit and watch TV with me at night and it'll mm-hmm. be perfect. And I'll take him to work and we'll be best buddies. Nope, they're not pets, so you don't watch TV with them, or at least not with my dog. Mm-hmm. You kind of intentionally keep them as a work dog. Part of their reward is your interaction with them. So when we bring them to work, when we do training, they love to work. So that is part of their reward, and you want them to constantly want that reward. So if I gave him his toy every day, it'd be like giving candy to your kids every day, and then it's not as fun.
Wait, you're not supposed to do that? Okay.
No. Well, you can do what you want. Not my kids. I don't care. But, yeah, so if they don't feel like they have to do anything to get the candy or whatever reward they get, then they're not going to – they don't care about it anymore. It's the same with a dog. If I give him his toy every day, it's not going to become as valuable to him. So I don't – on his days off, he doesn't get his toy. Unless he does something that I tell him to do, mm-hmm. he doesn't get a toy.
Yeah, so I guess that – so, listeners, I mean, these dogs, he stays with you, right? Yeah, like, with all the handlers, he lives with you.
Yep. We take him home. Where I work, we don't have take-home cars, so he literally rides in my personal car with me back and forth to work. When you go on vacation, you have to find a spot for them to stay. You have to keep their kennels clean. You have to feed them. It doesn't matter if it's sub-zero out or 97 degrees outside. You still, every day, have a dog to take care of. Mm. So, I don't know that that's like that throughout the nation, but... for us, we are connected. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge responsibility. I love it.
So talk about maybe a story that you're really proud of, that of Nero.
I have a bazillion of him. One of my favorites was probably when he was brand new. And it's just a prime example of how you learn through many years that you have to trust your dog because I probably didn't trust him, but it was... just a track, which are some of the hardest things for the dogs to work on, but a bank robber, and he ended up tracking, and he actually went track to the house where the robber was at. Well, if you went back and listened to my tape, you can hear me talking and be like, oh my gosh, I don't know. Is he right? Is he wrong? Because I was brand new. And the girl that's with me, she's like, well, this door and this and that. And the dog knew the whole time, and he tracked on some streets and stuff that it makes it a little tougher, and long story short, the bank robber ended up being in there with the note still in his pocket, so we kind of helped solve that case. And for me...
that's nice.
I was almost as shocked as everybody else, like, oh my gosh, he found him. And it goes back to trusting your dog, and I was so proud of him because I'm like, he did what I taught him to do. And it was it sounds stupid, but I was in shock that he had just tracked from the bank parking lot through these streets to this house, and it was right, and we ended up being able to pursue the case, and the guy got charged with it all because of the dog track. So it was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I was super excited.
Yeah. So what's some stuff he's done lately?
Most of my stories are tracking stories because that's what we work on the most. But I was actually just had torn my meniscus in my knee, so he was on light duty there for a while. But since we've been back, he's just had a couple what we call free air sniffs, which are the sniffs on the car, where he's alerted to the car. So we've been able to get a gun out of a car recently because of his alert. We found some people in the woods recently because of his tracking. So whenever a dog can help us get inside a car or find somebody in the woods that could potentially be dangerous to the community, get a gun out of a car, get meth out of a car, to me, I think it's just invaluable because who knows what they would have done with that gun? Who knows what the person in the woods might have done in a desperate situation? So I think it's great for the community to be able to use the dogs, find people, get guns off the street. And it also is a huge deterrent, I think, for people if they know if I run, the dogs are coming. If I have stuff in my car, the dogs are coming. I think that, I guess the more people realize that the dogs are good, they're going to think a little bit twice about running, hopefully, and maybe about driving around with bad stuff in their car because they know that we're going to find it.
Yep. And the dogs aren't just for finding the bad guys, right? So
no.
That's another thing that I've learned, too. So there's so many different uses.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that.
The whole opposite side of the spectrum that they're great at is, I kind of half touched on it earlier, is the community liaison part, because kids love dogs.
Mm-hmm.
People love dogs. They like seeing the dogs out there running around. And if walking my dog through a park allows me to connect with a group of kids playing basketball because they want to pet my dog, I think that that can help build relationships. It can help solve crimes later. It also helps people to see that there's a good side to police work. In today's atmosphere, sometimes it's good to see that, yes, we have dogs, and look, the dogs like us, and the dogs are nice, and we're out here trying to build those relationships to help us in future endeavors to solve crimes and show the community that we're out here with tools and stuff to help them keep bad people off the street.
Yeah.
So.
Yep, and these dogs are definitely instrumental in that.
Yeah.
And you guys even utilize the dogs for if you're finding missing person. So maybe an Alzheimer's patient, you know, has they're unable to find them, so you can are missing children.
Mm-hmm. I think it was maybe a couple of years ago now out in Allegan County, a dog found a missing child. I don't remember the date or anything anymore, but yeah, there's been many times where, especially in the wintertime in Michigan, the dogs are used to find Alzheimer's patients or children that wander off and have probably saved many a lives without any recognition because nobody's arrested. It doesn't make the news or anything, but the dogs will go out and they'll find these people under pine trees or lost or wandering around. And without them, who knows, you know, if somebody would have come across them or not. You hope that, yes, maybe, but to me, you never know. What if your loved one was out there? You would want the tool available to be able to use the dog to find them. And I've used my dog to help people find their lost keys before because, you know, if they're running on a trail or something and they drop their keys, and I've been able to bring my dog out there and find their keys for them. So their noses are
talented.
Yeah, their noses are unbelievable. That's obviously what we use them for the most is their nose work. And I couldn't give you the numbers on it, but their ability with their noses is just ungodly.
Yeah. How long is the work life of a dog?
It depends on the dog. I'm hoping, like I said, Nero's 7, so I'm hoping 8 or 9 with him. He kind of has bad teeth, so we'll see if his teeth can hold out. But
because they need those for biting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they need those for biting, and if their teeth go really bad, it affects their sense of smell.
Mm.
So that's
really?
Also, yeah, I don't know, but that's what the dog orthodontist told me one time. So
the dog orthodontist.
Yeah. So just
I gotta get that lady on here.
Yeah, just like if you have a cold, you can't taste things as well. So I think it would be somehow similar that way. So
yeah,
but I'm hoping to get him to a couple more years. But some dogs, even though they're tested and everything, their hips will go bad. Nero's a little bit smaller. He's only about a 65-pound shepherd, so his hips haven't shown any troubles yet. But I'd say 8 to 9 is about an average career for the dog. So
gotcha.
And when they quit, we don't just shoot them in the head. They get to come home and live with the handler. So
they get to be a pet then at that point.
Yep. They get to live the retirement life, which to me, they've earned tenfold.
Absolutely.
You know, even if it's just keeping me less stressed at work because I have something I can turn around and vent to when I need to.
So, obviously, we talk to all kinds of hustlers, but we focus primarily on women. And I can say without a doubt, just watching you in action and meeting you a couple times and seeing you at different trainings and interacting with the dogs and the other officers. But not just that. I will tell you that a lot of your buddies, a lot of the people on the team frequently refer to you as one of the best handlers they've ever seen, that they don't even say she's the best woman handler. They just say she's one of the best handlers. So they talk fairly highly of you, and I think for good reason, obviously.
I'm blushing.
Your passion about the job, your passion for the job shows through. Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, when I showed up to training, you know, typically you and maybe a handful of other women, it's a male dominated world. So what's it like dealing or working in that world?
I love it just because I've always been more of a tomboy type girl, obviously. I grew up playing sports. and I don't take a lot of things personal. I feel like I'm pretty laid back, and I love the challenge that I put in front of myself, whether rightfully or not. I guess I want to keep up with the boys. So that's almost something that motivates me is I don't, like you said, I don't want them to say you're the best female handler. I want them to say you're one of us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's throughout my career, I've always wanted, if I'm going to go back up one of my partners on the street, I don't want them to think, oh, great, Kelly's coming. I want them to think, hell yes, Kelly's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of been something to motivate me to at least attempt to stay in shape. I'm going to work as hard as I have to keep me and my dog in the place where people are like, yes, Kelly's coming, female or male, whatever. But I know that there is a little bit, I guess for me, it's just motivation. I'm going to keep up with you, it's not because she's a girl that it makes her cool. It's because she can keep up with us. So I kind of wanted to erase the gender thing and just be one of the guys and keep up with them. And yeah, just fit into the group without having to be like, oh, we better lower the step for Kelly, or Kelly can't do pull-ups, so we better not do this today, or whatever. So I guess for me, I just didn't want anybody to do anything different for me. So I've always wanted to keep up, and it motivates me. So,
yeah. Well, I can say that at the training that I was at, right, I had a job downstairs. Yeah. So this one training module that they did was, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, but to simulate a shooting in a nightclub, or, mm-hmm. you know, someone being in a nightclub there. So they had really loud music playing. It was in a basement. The lights were off. We were banging on stuff, and the strobe light was going. Mm-hmm. And there were seasoned officers, canine patrol officers, and brand new ones there, mm-hmm. too. So depending on who was coming down the stairs, you know, the level of loudness and mm-hmm. craziness and dark level would be different, which I think is really cool, obviously, mm-hmm. because you are teaching the dogs, but you're also teaching the people who are
right.
the handlers at the right. same time. And anytime, you know, you were coming down, it was like, all right, Kelly's coming 100%. Let's do this.
That's probably because of my dog more than me, because he's a little badass, I'll call him. And he's a kind of, he just makes me look good, luckily. But yeah, I would want it no other way. So
yeah.
That's just how I've always felt. And I'm super, super competitive. So and for me, it's just, I want to be the best. I don't care, male, female, whatever. That's what I strive for, and I always will.
Have you experienced challenges as a result of being a woman police officer?
Many. Yeah. But for me, my passion for the job just outweighs them. So you can either take them and make them a complaint, allow them to ruin your career, or you can use them to motivate you, which I have with some of them, or you can just completely brush them off and laugh them off, like whatever.
Right.
So luckily I'm kind of a goof and I'm pretty quirky. And so I just, a lot of things I'm able to just laugh off. Some things I've used to motivate me and basically be, I told you so, I'll get this, and yeah. I'm going to prove you wrong kind of thing. So yeah, there's, I'm sure there's challenges for men too and different things, but being a woman definitely presents its own set of challenges. And sometimes you have to set people straight in how they treat you or talk to you or whatever. But for me, that's never been anything that would ruin my, I don't care.
Right.
Talk to me how you're going to talk to me. I'll react how I'm going to react, and we'll move on from there.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. yeah, it doesn't. I just want my dog to be the best dog ever. So I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you're obviously on the way to that. So I want to circle back to something that you talked about earlier about when you become a police officer and about how it kind of changes you as a person. Because mm-hmm. I think that I've talked with a couple officers and getting to know you guys and your team. And that seems to be a common theme. So mm-hmm. and that can be difficult, I'm sure. You know, coming home after seeing what you've seen. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it, especially being a girl, I would say, it makes it a little difficult to come home and shut off the girl cop and become a woman, so to speak, because I'm very alpha at work. And then at home, I want to be treated like a little lady.
Yeah.
So it's hard to turn on and off. And then it's also hard for your significant other to realize like, oh, she's a girl now. So I have to take care of her because they're, and I remember dating way back when, and it would be like, oh, you're a cop. God, do you have handcuffs? And it was always just annoying. Right? Like, oh, my God, I don't want to be a cop right now. Right. I just really want to be a girl.
Right. Can you just, like, pay for my dinner and shut up?
Yeah. So I got to the point where I would just lie about what I did because it became such a thing. The not be treated like a cop and be treated like a woman. So that's probably one of the bigger challenges, I guess, of the home life, work life switch. And then the cynicism you get, you just don't trust anybody. So I guess like in social settings and stuff, I'm a little less social than I normally would be. And I almost go into a fake mode where I know I'm not going to build any deep relationships because I don't trust you off the get because of what I've seen and stuff like that. So to build like true deep friendships is a little more difficult for me anyways, because of the people I see get burned and the stuff I deal with on a daily basis. I just rather keep my group of friends tight. I know them, I trust them, and then I'll have acquaintances, but to build those deep relationships is a little tougher for me, I think.
Mm-hmm. Just because you see the bad that's out there, essentially, or you see what people are capable of?
Yeah, the second, I would say, more than anything. And you also, the bond you build with your partners is hard to compete with, I guess. So I have super strong bonds with a lot of the people I work with because we're all in this together. And I know what they're thinking and I know how they're thinking. So for me, I'll just go back to when I was dating. You go, you work with these alpha guys all day long. They have your back. You have their back. And then you go out and you date a guy that's maybe just a college student or something back in my day. And so his stories are like, yeah, I really struggled in biology today. And you're like, I don't care. Like,
I don't give a shit about your biology. Your problem? Class, right?
Like, do you know what the problems are in this world? And this is going to stress you out and ruin your day. So it's very hard to have empathy when you come home with your loved ones because you're dealing with someone that just maybe had a tragic accident in their life or lost a loved one or got arrested and you had to watch their 4-year-old watch their dad get taken to jail. And then you come home and the problem is like, oh, my coworker was talking bad about me today. And you're like, suck it up, you know? And I'm supposed to be the nurturing girl when I get home. Yeah. So it was, that's hard, I guess, to be the both worlds and turn the switch on and off.
How do you do that? Have you learned to do that?
Probably not as well as I should have.
Uh-huh. Well, that's so it's difficult.
It's affected my personal life in a sense, but I guess it comes down to just finding the right person that knows you and knows that I care deeply for people. I'm extremely loyal and I'll have your back no matter what. But just be aware that there are going to be times that I'm a little harder than you would expect. So I might not deal with a situation with a ton of empathy because to me, it's no big deal.
Right.
Okay, so you got an offender bender today. It should not ruin your world. Like, I take 7 of those a day. It's not a big deal. Like, we can move on. But some people, I forget, their only interaction is, this is the first fender bender they've been in 80 years of their life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
putting things in perspective and having empathy is a little more difficult, especially trying to take on the female role when I go home is difficult sometimes.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's a great point. And trying to put those things into perspective when you're on a 12-hour shift and you've seen some shit. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you got to come home and
decide if you're going to tell your loved one or not, because if you tell them, then you've just exposed them to something traumatic. And I'm kind of mid-career, so I've become pretty good at just shutting down. And a lot of things don't bother me that probably should, or I'm sure every cop will tell you the same thing. And I'm not saying it. I love my career, so I'm not trying to knock it in any sense in the word, but
you almost have to. Right.
Yeah. If everything affected me the way it should, then I would be in some mental hospital, probably.
Right, right, right. You've got to be able to have those compartments to shut it off in order to live some kind of normal life when you come home. Because it is a job at the end of the day, you know? But I mean, it's something you're getting paid for. But it's not. I mean, it's a lifestyle, obviously. Yeah. But we had, I had an Iraq war veteran on here.
Yeah.
And she talked about that, too, about just how in her brain it was almost like when she was going off, when she was leaving her family, it was like she was going room through room and shutting off the lights in each room. Like she just had to shut the lights off and compartmentalize all that and not think about it. And then when she came back home, she had to go back and turn the lights on. And that was just a difficult process, both leaving and coming back. Just shutting those things down and then turning those things on like a switch is something that I think would be the most challenging part about the job.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy, in my opinion. I don't have it to that extreme where I'm gone for a long period of time, but there definitely is a, oh yeah, I forget, I'm home now type of thing. Sometimes you have to remember to turn it on and off and when to turn it on and off, and it's okay to loosen up sometimes and relax and not have your guard up all the time, but
yeah,
it makes you nervous sometimes too, so And then when you go back to work, you turn it all back on. They actually, a lot of my friends and family will just say I'm in cop mode. So if my mom calls me while I'm at work, she sometimes will be like, never mind, I'm going to call you when you're not in cop mode anymore. Because I'm just black and white. Everything's black and
white.
You
have to be, right?
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I'm going to call you when you're not in cop mode because you don't care right now. And it's the truth. I don't care. I'm going to whatever call I'm going to. And you're complaining that somebody just flipped you off when they drove by you on the highway. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, it's just normal things that we would vent about as mom and daughter. But when I'm in that mode at work, I'm just a different person. So even like I said, if I had my uniform on while we did this interview, my tone of voice would be different. I would just talk different. It gives me a alpha confidence. Mm-hmm. More than if you take me out of my uniform and put me in regular clothes and then take my picture, I'm like, oh my God, get me out of here. I don't want to talk, but the news can come around in uniform and I don't care. Yeah, don't care at all.
Super shy. When Kelly got here, she was like, yeah, like, wait, what do you mean Facebook Live? Wait, what do you mean we have to take my picture? And I'm like, yeah. Kelly, just...
Yeah, more
it's
wine.
Okay. More wine. More wine. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're certainly, I mean, you do have an alpha personality and you're confident. But that's funny that you think that part comes from, that part of that comes from the uniform.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, definitely. If I'm in uniform, I'll make a lot of my business calls when I'm in uniform because I just even talk on the phone a lot more confidently. So I don't know why, but I guess I just feel tougher. So.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like when you are wearing heels and a dress and you walk into all of these guys and Kelly working with their dogs in uniform. Yeah. It's a little bit of a different feeling.
Oh, I bet.
Because I feel a little bit more comfortable right here.
Yeah. See, I thought you looked like a badass walking into there. Like, oh my gosh, she's wearing heels. To me, it's a different level of respect because I'm like, wow, she's put together. She's here. She owns herself.
Oh, and honey, I'm not put together. But
that's the impression you gave. So you faked it well. Because I'm like, thanks. Ooh. Wowzer. So,
thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. I was. Everybody has their own comfort levels, right? Yeah. So, like, I feel comfortable in heels. That's why it's called Hustling in Heels. That's what I do. Like, if I have my heels on, just like and I love this because you're right. Like, when you have your uniform on, when you have what you feel is part of what identifies you, I guess, you do have that level of confidence. And I'm sure hustlers, you know, they're out there, they're familiar with that. Like when you are in your zone, when you're doing what you're doing, you think you're the best and you know you're the best. Yeah. When I'm working, you know, when I got heels on, when I'm going out and talking with the public about my financial institution, like I feel pretty comfortable doing that too. Yeah. So, and that's a good thing. I mean, obviously we want that. Now, my job pales in comparison to
your I wouldn't think you so I would be do. Like oh gosh I couldn't do that so and you yeah you definitely give a air of confidence and just like what do you got, I'm ready. I will chase you down in heels.
And like, well, oh. I did wear a bite suit.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I took my shoes off for that. So in fact, I think a lot of our listeners will remember I shared that video on social media because I felt like just a tiny fraction of like how, I don't know, like how scary but kind of cool it is to be in that world just from my minimal interaction with that. Now, I could never do it as a job just because I just couldn't. I mean, I'm just not built that way, I don't think. And I think I would have a very difficult time flipping the switch. Yeah. I just think that I would, you know. But I like give so much credit. Like, this podcast, we are a friend of law enforcement and we are a friend of canine officers. So, I mean, that I don't know. There's not much cooler people in my book than what you guys do, and I'm thankful every damn day that you guys are out there doing what you do. So, because otherwise,
Well, it's people like you that come and help us and support us that make it all worth it. Because we get a lot of the naysayers, but when people like you show up in heels to come to our training because it's cool, it makes us kind of feel like, oh, people do like us. It's cool.
People do like you. Yeah.
People appreciate what we do. So it really goes back and forth. It's definitely, you pay it forward. So we appreciate that.
So, any other stories you want to tell us or anything that I haven't asked you that you want listeners to know just kind of about the world that you live in?
I feel like we've touched on a lot of it. I guess the only thing we really haven't touched on is maybe a little bit is just the bond I have with the training group and how we all support each other.
Talk about that.
I think that it's one of the most special bonds that you can have is when you're working with these people every day and they support you in every little call you go on. If you find, you know, a small little amount of drugs in a car, or if you track a bank robber, they're there and they have your back. And for me, that's irreplaceable. It makes my job, makes me love my job. I like the people I work with, and it makes it worth going to work and working hard, because when those same people call on me to perform, I want to be able to perform for them and keep them safe. So that's a huge, I guess, career motivator for me, is just the relationship you have with your coworkers, or not necessarily all of them, but a good number of them. And it makes you motivated to work hard and be there for them, because you never want to be that person that they're like, oh, great.
Yeah. So. And I know you're not that person. I mean, I've just heard so many like amazing things about you, and the guys talk about you like, you know, you're one of just the coolest. So
I am a fool.
Guys are easy.
Yeah, exactly. I will say being a female helps in that sense. It does. You can fool guys easily. But
it's super easy. Yeah. But the cool thing about your training group, too, is that you're not all from the same department. So you guys come together from different counties, you know, throughout Michigan to come and train together. And the bond that you guys have is definitely evident. And when you guys are training, you're working, you know, and I just love the support that you give to the younger members and the guys who have brand new dogs and who are brand new to the force. Just a pretty cool thing to see, you know, that support that you guys have for each other. And I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to to Guy, because he thinks that he might be partially responsible for maybe you coming on the podcast.
Probably.
He's not.
Probably. He likes to take credit for the things that I do.
No, I'm just giving him a hard time. So he said he was going to listen to you tonight.
I can't wait to get the messages.
And I'm sure all the rest of the guys in the training group are going to be sharing it on their Facebook page. Kelly doesn't have Facebook, but but the rest of the team does, and I'm certain that they will be sharing this interview.
That's awesome.
And
which is why I don't do these things. Right. Only for Stacey, because she wore heels to training.
See what happens when you wear heels, ladies, and see what you can get accomplished. But no, he said he was going to listen to you, and he's got nothing but good things to say about you and really the rest of the team. It's just a cool thing to see. So I appreciate you guys letting me be just a tiny part of it. Just be a fly on the wall and see what's going on.
We appreciate what you do for us.
Hey, thanks.
So thank you.
Yeah, it's a fun time. So we're going to probably finish off the rest of this bottle here, because I've been making Kelly talk a whole bunch. Yeah.
And I'm blushing now. I don't take compliments well. So. And my phone is vibrating like crazy, so I can only imagine.
Do you think that maybe they know that you're going to be on here tonight?
If you told them. I didn't tell anybody, because I knew you would play this game. But I have a feeling that if Pickett knows, then the rest of them are going to find out.
Oh, well, shit. Yeah, they've all been alerted.
That's okay. It'll give them some ammo.
They're just jealous they're not on the podcast. That's all it is.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. No, those are some good people for sure.
Yep.
So, thanks for joining us tonight. And, I know what I was going to ask you. Advice. Yep. I know. I mean, we've got thousands of listeners. I know that there are some hustlers out there. It doesn't matter. Guys, girls, we have both that are listening. We interview all kinds, all types, wearing all kinds of different shoes. What is your advice if there's somebody out there who's looking into maybe becoming a police officer or even becoming a canine officer?
Work hard. It would be my biggest amount of advice. Just know what your passion is and work hard and don't settle. So keep your head down. If you, I don't want to say prove yourself, but as long as you have a great work ethic and a good attitude, don't let the naysayers bring you down and keep grinding. Because if you work hard, then people they can't say anything bad about you. They might not like you as a person. People might think I'm weird or quirky or whatever, but no one can say I'm lazy. So for me, that's one of the biggest things I want. When I leave my department, I don't want anybody to ever say she was lazy, she didn't work hard, she was bad backup. So those are my goals. If you work hard, I promise you, one, you'll get where you want to go, and people have nothing bad to say about you.
Love it. And you definitely, I mean, that is the impression that you give off. I mean, when I first met you, I thought, all right, I got to get this girl on the podcast. Awesome. Got to get her on here.
That's so flattering. So. I did something right then.
Yep. Well, you offered flip-flops. So yeah. That was also a bonus. So anyways, thanks, Kelly, for joining us tonight. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You betcha. And
it wasn't so bad.
It wasn't so bad. See?
I don't know if I could make eye contact with you, but staring at this... off-duty mouse pad has been really entertaining. I feel better now. Once this thing's shut off, I'll look at you again.
I'm not that intimidating.
You have no idea.
Oh, goodness. That's funny. All right. So, Hustlers, thanks for joining us again this week. Make sure you are subscribing. Leave us a review. That really helps us in the iTunes charts. We are trying to bump up in the charts, so I would appreciate any help that you can give us that way. Leave us a review. Like us on Facebook. Like us on Instagram. Follow us on Instagram. I mean, you can follow us on Twitter, but you know, I'm not really out there. I'm not going to lie. So, yeah. Thanks for joining us again, and appreciate all that you do out in the hustling world. If you have any suggestions, feel free to send them to me at letschat@hahpod.com. And until next Wednesday, see you later, hustlers.
Hustlin' and Heels is an NBI Studios production. Your hosts are Stacey Carlin and Kaylee Gaines, and all views and opinions expressed on the shows are theirs and theirs alone. Your executive producer is Michael Bussing, and all music and artwork for the show was created by Shane Yoder with PutThemInASong.com. You can follow along with Stacey and Kaylee on all forms of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HIHpod. And you can also send the show an email to letschat@hihpod.com. Feel free to write into the ladies if you're hustling in heels, tennis shoes, work boots, slippers, socks, or barefoot. If you've got a question, comment, or to suggest a guest, or even if you'd like to be a part of the show. That's all we have today, so make sure you tune in next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time for our next episode. But until then, keep on hustling, ladies.